You know, we say, oh, drinking. Yes, the problem of drinking. Yes, drinking. As we sit here this afternoon, every single one of us alcoholics, we do not have a drinking problem. I don't care a damn who you are. We do have a problem. How do we handle our sobriety? And if we handle it in accordance with the suggestions of the 164 pages of that big book, and the 12 and 12, and as Bill sees it, an AA becomes of age. That's all I know about Alcoholics Anonymous, other than knowing and being with you folks and others like you. The big book, the 12 and 12, as Bill sees it, an AA becomes of age. And I heard somebody say, oh yes, I worked these 12 steps. Yes, yes. You did like hell working 12 steps. And you're not expected to either, by the God of my understanding, and it tells us so in the big book. We're not expected to be successful. We are with them. We are expected, however, to try. And if there's any doubt in your mind, I'll show it to you after me. Because if you go a little further and you will try and you will see and under the sixth step, the explanation in the 12 and 12 where it says we work to a perfection but one step, and that is when we make the 100% admission that we are powerless over alcohol. Don't say anything about life unmanageable. Over alcohol. The other 11 steps, it says, are perfect ideals toward which we look and which we use as an indicator to indicate our progress. We work every one of these steps. If you want to take another look at it, and you'll see where it says the first two steps are reflections. That's what the first two steps are, they're reflections. And the third step is the first one where action is indicated. I don't know where they are. There are dangers that hang over our program today and has for many, many years. Now, I'm not one of the boys on the well, they call them circuit riders, but I do travel a lot, and I was in throughout Canada and over in Scotland and England. But there are dangers that hang over AA. You folks sitting here today is a real indication of your loyalty to this fellowship. And as I stand up behind here, this is not a meeting when, if we want to be honest with ourselves and any one of the boys or gals that's speaking, we are simply monopolizing your time. Think it over. Where we get our AA, we get them in the small groups. That's where AA comes from. And that's where it started. 17 years, I declined to go anywhere outside of the state of Texas because I felt I was inadequate. And I looked at the guys and gals up behind here as being examples of what this program is, particularly for the new guy or gal. I'll go to hell and back again with you, and my track record will show it. I'll go to hell and back again with you if you want to quit drinking. And if you don't want to quit drinking, you can go to hell alone. It's none of my business. I'm not going to bother you. I could go on up here for a long time. I'm not going to, because I hope every one of you will come back on here, Johnny. But, and hear Jim tomorrow morning. But I've become a great believer in prayer today, because I've had too many prayers answered for me. And I'd rather see a sermon than hear one any day. And I'd rather that you walk with me than merely tell the way. Because the eye is quicker, and it's more willing than the ear. And it's your example that makes it mighty clear. Now the best of preachers, the men who live their creeds, for seeing good put in action is what everybody needs. Now I can do it if you'll show me how it's done. For I can watch your hands in action, but your tongue too fast might run. Now the lectures you deliver, undoubtedly wise and true, but the lesson that I want to learn is by always watching you. For I might not understand that high advice you give, but there's no misunderstanding the way you act and live. I was going to, at the outset, pay my respects to Al-Anon, and I got shifted off into something else. But I do want to extend my personal regards to you guys and gals of Al-Anon, and I would like to tell you what Bill said to you, Bill Wilson, your first gathering in New York in conjunction with your Canadian brothers and sisters. These are the words of Bill Wilson. He said, Al-Anon is the biggest thing that has happened since AA was started, in my opinion. The reason for your phenomenal growth is due to your determination to fill that vast vacuum of family relationship. And as we all realize, that is the most important. And I always like to add these words of my own. I have for years. I always say, blessed be the alcoholic who has a good Al-Anon mate to come home to. Some of us guys and gals are not that fortunate. I just happened to flash in my mind that I hadn't mentioned that to you. Yes, I am a great believer in prayer today. And I have reason to. I mentioned my wife, Polly. We were divorced in 1951. She never remarried, and neither did I. And after I got straightened around, oh yes, I promised my friend Howard that I'd tell you an incident in the Cadiz Street Club in Dallas. This is as true as I stand here. There were no halfway to what houses in those days, you know. Come on, boys, it's time to eat lunch at noon, you know. Is it 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock? No, we didn't have that. So I'm mopping floors and washing dishes for the privilege of sleeping upstairs there in the Cadiz Street Club down by the market. Gracie, you know. Still had my 2 degrees. And one day, one Saturday, bingo. And I had to set up the tables and get everything ready. I'd get a couple of the guys to help me. And this Saturday, we had the tables all set up, everybody, you know. And we can't, we're looking around to find the bingo beans. We get them in a certain place. And I'm helping a girl from the suburban group. We used to call them the nylon group in that those days. You know, that was, you know, the gals would talk, you know, back here, you know, you all. Hello. You know. Well, I'm helping Karen look for the bingo beans. And we'd been, of course, we'd been using them for a month. And for the life of us, we couldn't find them. Here's a fellow with the things, starting the machine there, the squirrel cage, and waiting for the beans. So finally, we had to go out and get some more. I told Karen, I said, Karen, I'm positive I saw those beads that last Wednesday right up there on the shelf. You know, another guy and I cooked those bingo beans and ate them. And they'd been playing with those damn things for a month. And I wish you could see in the water, you know, trying to, you know, we're rinsing them. And see, the more water we'd put in, the more cloudy that water would be. Finally, we gave up. We could see the beans in there anyway through the water, so we just cooked them and ate them. It wasn't until 5.5 years later when I met Karen did I have the nerve to tell her what happened to those bingo beans. Yeah. So it wasn't all sweetness and light. And I mentioned my wife the last time that I saw her alive. I went home to Maine to visit she and Johnny. And we're walking toward the ocean. The boys that come with me have heard me say this so many times. We're walking toward the ocean. And for the first time in 15 years, Polly put her arm around my back. And of course I put mine around him. To be honest with you, I figured the old boy might get home. Yeah. It had only been 15 years. And see, I'd go home about every summer, or once every 2 years anyway, spend 4 or 5 days. And my God acting in many mysterious ways. And she stopped like that. We're about maybe 100 yards from the ocean, and she said, John, I never believed what I heard about you for 12 years. I've been hearing about you. But these last 3 years, I have believed. And would you promise me something? Now I'm expecting her to say, will you promise that you won't take a drink and come home? And of course, when she said this, I couldn't get it out quickly enough. You bet, honey, what is it that you want me to promise you? She said, if anything should happen to me, would you promise me that you would take care of Johnny if he needed help? I said, why, of course, don't worry about it. I didn't know that Polly was dying. She never told me. My God, the intestinal fortitude that you women have and going is tough. I come back. We're drilling out in Holbrook, Arizona, short ways away. Well, afterwards, never had left a lease in over 20 years. And my partner said, let's go in town this afternoon. This thing might come in. So we went in. We were parked, but our trailer was parked between Twin Buttes because of the weather, and we could hardly reach Holbrook on the phone, mobile phone. Ladies and gentlemen, I swear to God, true as I stand behind this podium, we're not in that trailer more than 2 minutes. Now you understand, I hadn't left a lease in the daytime that I could ever remember in the oil business. That horn started to blow, and I said to Charlie, I'll get it, Charlie, and I went out. And it was my son, Johnny, talking to me. That distance was about 3,000 miles, not quite, about 2,900 miles, from Belfast, Maine, where our summer home was. Ours, there you go, that our business, you know, that community property law, you leave the community and she gets the property. But, I don't mean in hours. But as clearly as I'm talking to you now, it was my son, a little over 2,900 miles away. Bear in mind, we could hardly get Holbrook, 14 miles away. God acting in many mysterious ways. And Johnny said, "Dad, would you please come home? Mother passed away this noon." And it was you folks that I'm trying to get even with made it possible for me to go back to my native state again and my native city and stand beside my son at the graveside of his mother, once more a useful and a decent person. Why in the world shouldn't I come to Norman or go anywhere else if I possibly can? Yeah. I don't say that as any tear-jerking thing. I simply, in a matter of God acting in many mysterious ways. And as a result of my being in Arizona, I became very well acquainted with a Navajo Indian boy, and we tried to do something out there at Window Rock in AA. We weren't too successful. They are now. They're doing a good job out there. And little Tommy, we were talking, and he said, "John, from what you say, you folks are highly spiritual, aren't you?" And I said, yes, we're not denominational, any dogma, no denominational. But we are highly spiritual. He said, "You might not believe this, Johnny, but many of our braves are highly spiritual." And he said, and I'll show you again, God acting in many mysterious ways. He said, "My grandfather years ago, I don't know where he got this prayer, but he handed it down to our family. And from what you tell me about Alcoholics Anonymous program, this might help you." Well, it's so apropos to me. I don't know about you, but to me. I asked him if I could have it, and he said, "Sure, of course you can." He didn't know where his grandfather got it. And I'm in Hawaii 3 years ago. The incidence is 1956 when he gave me the prayer. I had tried college professors, I tried high school teachers, I had tried librarians, I had tried every way in the world. And I never could find where this prayer came from. And I'm in Hawaii 3 years ago, and I used the prayer, as I always do in closing, and I'm going to use it here and that. And this little girl came up to me from Carmel, California, and she was crying. She says, "I was graduated from the Red Cloud Indian School, and Chief Red Cloud was the one who wrote that prayer. So help me." When I returned home, I got a letter from Father Kurth, who was the director of the Red Cloud Indian School in Pine Ridge, South Dakota, and he said, now he had not contacted, had any time to contact this little girl, because she was spending quite a bit of time over there. He said, "I heard your tape where you had asked for the prayer of the Indian came from," and he gave me exactly what this little girl told me in Hawaii. It only happened about 3 days. I'd come home from Hawaii when this mail came. And as I say, it's so apropos to me. It goes like so. "O Great Spirit, I hear your voice in the winds that breathes life into all the world. Hear me, I'm small and I'm weak. I need your strength and your wisdom that you have hidden under every leaf and stone. Let me always walk with beauty, and my eyes ever behold the red and purple sunset. Make me wise so I will know what you have told my people. Make my hands always respect the things that you have made, and my ears sharp so I will always hear your voice. O Great Spirit, I seek this strength and this wisdom, not to be greater than my brother, but to fight my greatest enemy, myself. And when my days are ending as the shadows leave the sunrise, may my spirit stand straight before your eyes without shame. After tomorrow, we'll be wending our ways to our respective homes. I hope that we do so at peace with ourselves, at peace with our fellow man, and at peace with the God of our understanding. And in closing, may I say thank God for the creation of those two beloved men, Dr. Bob and Bill, and that little fellow who went to Bill on that November afternoon in 1934, because none of us, in my opinion, would be here today if it hadn't been for Ebbe Thatcher. Thank you. And as God, as Bill, and as Bob, look down upon you folks here in this town of Norman, and you folks who have been so instrumental in this beautiful gathering. If we could hear them from their Valhalla, and I know they're there, they'd be saying to you folks, well done, don't get discouraged, keep trying to carry the message to that still suffering alcoholic. Thank you, and God bless every one of you.